Well, welcome to Reengage. My name is John McGee. I'm the director here at Reengage. It's my wife, Pam. And, you know, I was thinking back there, I sent Pam the notes to this talk. I told her last night, I said, hey, just your reminder that we're up to tomorrow night at Reengage talking about community. Or she goes, what are we talking about? I say, hey, communication. And I sent her the notes today. And so here she is after, you know, delivering kids at small group, picking them up from school, and just kind of screaming in here on two wheels. And we got back there, and she was like, whew. So thank you. This is my job. I kind of have to, but she's willing, and she has a choice. And so just always thanks for being up here with me. It's fun. So
it's always good. I mean, just God knows when we're going to teach on something. I think we say this every time, but God knew that we needed to teach on communication because we, and we'll throw ourselves under the bus plenty of times, I'm sure, tonight. Yeah. But just we definitely needed to be reminded about a lot of the stuff in here, as do a lot of you guys, either here for the first time or be reminded if you've heard this before. Just these principles that are really based on the scripture, and we'll talk about that. But just it's been good for us. The timing is good.
Yeah. Yes. So this is a topic we're pretty passionate about. Lots of reasons. You know, first, just in our own kind of marriage. This was year seven. I mean, exactly the same stuff we're going to share tonight is the stuff we read seven years into our marriage. And there was just a turning point for us. We went from I think it was a good marriage to something that was just really, really life-giving at that point. Communication was a big part of that. Also passionate about it because just kind of the stats and the research would tell you that this is a really big deal. Communication is a big deal. And in fact, that there's some really interesting research that they'll do. They'll hook like electrodes up to people and monitor like heart rates and blood pressure and all these kind of things and just watch people talk. And the way they talk, we just by observing them, they know nothing about their family of origin, how long they've been married, education, any of that. But just purely by watching them talk, they can predict, you know, within about 88 to 93% accuracy whether this couple will be married 2 to 5 years from now. Just purely on the way they communicate. This is a really big deal, okay? That's why we're passionate about it. We love sharing about it. We've never clipped out of this talk. It's something that we continue have to go back for a refresher. We're in the 101 class continually, and so we're really just kind of excited to share with you. So, you have any other thoughts as we get going?
Yeah. No, we're preaching to the choir. John said earlier, like, y'all just get to listen. This is really kind of for us.
Yep, it's good. So, kind of a key verse, James 1:19, just to anchor when we start. But everyone, let us be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. Okay, this is a great, I don't think there's a formula to that, but it really is interesting. Listen first, right? Be slow to speak and slow to become angry. And so I think because of that, we can kind of, you know, if that were like, if in God's design and his word is like, this is the formula, I think it's a good one. From that, we could just kind of discern that the goal of communication is to understand, right? Goal is not so much to get our point across in marriage. It is to understand. And if we're trying to understand and our spouse is really trying to communicate, we'll come out at a really good place. And our tendency a lot of times is to come into this thing angry and talk about a whole bunch and then listen to make sure they understood what you're saying. And I think there's just something to that formula, quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry. And it always goes well for us when we kind of follow that model. It doesn't go well for us when we kind of deviate from that. And so just to remember that the goal of communication is understanding and not to be right. And that, quite honestly, that was where we got into a lot of trouble early on in our marriage. Is we'd come and okay, there's a clear scorecard here. Someone's going to win, someone's going to lose, and it's not going to be me. You know, two hyper competitive people that weren't going to go down or take the fall for anything. And so we would just kind of use whatever strategy we had to win. And once we understood that the goal was to just understand each other, that really changed everything, and it totally changed the scorecard. Did we win together rather than us individually? And I think it was just a real catalyst for just kind of future growth for us. Yep.
Yeah. And the second reason, or just thing, point here at the beginning, is really that we don't fight, contrary to popular belief, because you know, finances are hard because the kids are crazy because we're tired. We fight because we're selfish. James 4:1 says, where do you think these appalling wars and quarrels come from? Do you think they just happen? Think again. They come about because you want your own way and you fight deep inside yourselves. So that, you know, the opposite of James 1:19, that quick to become angry and make sure that, you know, I'm talking first, that is because I'm selfish. And that's why we fight. Those other things, the kids, in-laws, money or lack of it, all those things definitely play into that. But the bottom line is because we're selfish. We're sinners at heart. And so that's why we fight.
Yeah, it just kind of surfaces some of the stuff in our own heart when we get kind of pressed or squeezed. And so that there's a reason why communication isn't the first lesson and reengage. It's kind of the night. And so the idea is that if our hearts are right and we come to some of the skills, then we operate out of those in loving and kind of Christ-like, Christ-focused ways rather than just kind of using skills to get our way or manipulate our spouse. And so that is at the beginning of this talk, is that the reason why we don't communicate well is our hearts, right? And when we get that right, more oftentimes than not, we will come out to a great place in communication, okay? So we're going to go over kind of the four negative communication patterns, and what I want you to do is just kind of listen for yourself, okay? Self-identify, and everything in you will want to just nudge or draw an arrow to the person you're sitting next to or something, you know, and go, you totally do that, okay? That's what you're going to want to do, and I would just challenge you just to listen to yourself. How does that show up? How do I do that? What is it that I do that looks a little bit like that? How am I kind of subverting our marriage? Okay, so just kind of self-identify. If you have any, you know, guys, that'll probably be all the brain space we have. If you have any brain space left, you can begin to think about the relationship as a whole, but think primarily kind of for yourself, okay? So the first one there is withdraw and avoidance, okay? Withdraw and avoidance, and that's kind of the unwillingness to get in or stay with important discussions, right? So you either don't want to have that conversation or you leave kind of in the middle of it. So it could be just as direct as getting up and leaving the conversation. You know, you see kind of, you know, tempers kind of start to flare, or you've seen this before, you know what's coming, and so you bolt, or you're just fearful, or those kind of things, and you leave. Or you know that a conversation's supposed to happen, and you just don't go there. Or you kind of shut down in the middle of it. Any of those are withdraw and avoidance.
Yeah, it's basically anything that you're doing to avoid the topic. So you know this hard topic's coming. I'm going to do whatever it takes to not make the conversation go there. I mean, there have been times where I'll just come at John with the same thing, and he knows it's coming. 17 years in, he knows what conversation's coming. And
it's like Groundhog Day.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just saying.
You know, yeah. And we've both done this, but he would say, like, there's been times that I've thought, okay, whatever I can say to get this woman off my back, I'm going to say it, just whether I agree or not, whatever it is, just to make peace. And that's really not real peace. It's fake peace. And so anything that avoids or kind of keeps you from getting to the heart of the matter is withdraw and avoiding.
Yeah, when you're searching kind of the mental Rolodex for that one phrase that you know will get her or him off your back, you know, and shuts the thing down.
Honey, you're right.
Honey, you're right. When in doubt, say that. That's a great... That's a great sign that you're a withdrawer or an avoider, okay? And so for the most part, Pam and I will move into conversations, but there's some times I just like, oh, man, I just don't want to go there, you know? And so I don't leave the room, but I have been known, like Pam said, if you've been married long enough, you know what's coming. She says, honey, I need to talk. And, you know, if you're halfway astute, you know what you've done or what's coming. And so if she kind of brings something up, I've been known to kind of switch the tracks so that the train doesn't end up at the station she wants to. You know, now I really want to talk about the kids, or like, we haven't done our budget or whatever it is, right? And so that's a form of I'm talking, but I'm still avoiding the conversation. So that's happened before. So how do we fix that?
Just the way to fix this, if you are a withdrawer or an avoider, is just to stay in the conversation. It's probably not what you wanted to hear, but like really just realize the importance of resolving conflict and just staying in the conversation. And just know that this may be hard, but that there's true peace on the other side when you work through it. So the withdrawer just needs to stay in the conversation.
Yeah, and so just seeing, Todd, our senior pastor, has a great line. He says, you know, conflict is an opportunity. We'll go with communication as well as an opportunity to glorify God, grow ourselves, and grow others. And instead of just kind of running away from communication and moving towards it and saying, I don't know how this is going to resolve itself. This is a tough issue. But moving towards it and running towards it, seeing it as an opportunity will change, to change kind of the way that we view communication will really help us. And so I think another thing is just if you're sitting next to a withdrawer, okay, and some of you are, many of us are, It's their responsibility ultimately, okay, to get in and stay with the conversation. But you bear a responsibility to ask, hey, what is it about me that would make it hard either to start a conversation or stay with it? Okay? You're not absolved from their issue. You're probably doing something with all of these. You're probably doing something that makes that kind of their proclivity, okay? And so just to think about it, I'm sitting next to withdraw. What is it about me? And you can ask them, hey, what is it about me that makes it hard to stay in a conversation? What could I do to make it feel safe? Those are fantastic questions to ask your spouse, okay?
Good. Yeah. So the next, that's withdrawal and avoidance. The next one is escalation. And that's just like it sounds. When partners are talking, when you and your spouse are talking, and things just kind of get more and more hostile, oftentimes voices are raised. Maybe it's sarcasm and just subtle little jabs, but just the situation just gets more and more hostile. And someone just oftentimes kind of blows their top, leaves the room, again, just kind of subtly. We don't typically yell, but there have been times where just let's see if we can one-up each other with our kind of put-downs or get the last word in. Any of that is escalation.
Yeah, and so like it can be, I mean, obviously you guys probably have a picture. We used to teach a class on communication. We had this video, and it looked like a Springer episode. I mean, this guy had a mullet, and they were sitting down on the couch, and she's smoking, you know, and so he says, the conversation starts with, I came in last night and there were crumbs on the table. Like, what's the deal? He'd been working the late shift, comes home, crumbs on the table, and they just start going at it. You know, you're lazy, no good, you know, I can't believe I'm here. And they're just going, like, started with crumbs. And like later, like, no kidding, in this same conversation, they begin to talk about who's going to get the kids when they get a divorce. Like, what are custody arrangements going to be? You know, and you just look back and you just go, are you kidding me? You know, crumbs to visitation rights. I mean, how in the world does that happen? And it's when you view it in other people's relationship, you just go, it's nuts. But there's times I think if we rewind the tape, we go, what started all this? And it was metaphorically, it was crumbs. And when we just kind of kept ratcheting it up, because we got to win. Then that's escalation. And it's incredibly damaging to the long-term health of any relationship. You're kind of trashing the long-term view. If I'm not going to be with you, I'll just say whatever it is I want to say. When you have a long-term view, you would say those things, right? And you'd really learn to kind of keep a rein on your tongue. So,
yeah. Well, and two thoughts on that. Really, one way to fix it is just for someone just saying, being kind of more like Christ, being the bigger person and say, I'm not gonna indulge in this. And y'all have heard story after story up here of people who just, one of the spouses just says, I am going to own my part, regardless of what they do. I'm going to work on my part. I'm going to get my relationship, the vertical they talked about a few weeks ago. I'm going to get my relationship right with the Lord. And so just someone saying, okay, I'm not going to be a part of that. And then practically, a great thing is the timeout. And so if you feel it getting more hostile, the escalation's coming, just calling a timeout. That's not a withdrawal technique. It's really just so you can both back away and kind of look at your own self, come under the control of the Holy Spirit, and then revisit it with a little cooler heads.
Yeah, so rather than just kind of giving, the Bible says a fool gives vent to his anger, rather than doing that, saying, I want to have this conversation. I'm just, if we could, can I get a few minutes, or can we talk tonight if the kids go to bed, or in the morning, or something like that. But definitely kind of having, calling a time in and not using it as just a way to get out of a conversation. So this week, Pam, you know, she was like, hey, there's a few things I want to talk about. And it was, I remember the first one was, hey, just in the morning, I could use more help with the kids. And there was a couple of them. And I just thought, oh, man, you know, like I really didn't. I was tired. And I just like, I don't know this is going to go real well right now. It's like 10:30 or 11 or something like that, you know. And I said, hey, I'd love to have this conversation. Could we have it tomorrow? And so I don't know whenever that was, about noon, you know, we were talking. And I said, hey, so let's come back to all that you talked about. And so I just kind of bore the responsibility. I just said, I want this to go well. I fear that it won't at 11:30. It generally doesn't. But let's have the conversation. And so we're able to come there. I'd kind of work through any of the, like my defense, you know, whatever she said, I was going to outmaneuver her with this. I was past that. So great. You know what? We're married. She needs more help. Let's talk about if that's reasonable or not. And let's talk about what that would look like. Let's have that conversation. And so just knowing when to kind of play that and thinking about the long-term view of the relationship.
Good?
Yeah. Great. So a lot of times those two go together, withdrawal and the escalation. The withdrawal, a lot of you will be sitting next to each other. And so the you know, the withdrawer says, you know, golly, you know, you don't care about a relationship. You're always on my back. And the pursuer is saying, you know, you don't care about a relationship. You won't ever sit down and talk about this kind of stuff. And so those two tend to feed on each other and bring out the worst. And if that's you, you just need to be able to kind of talk about, hey, what would it look like for us to stop that and be able to talk in kind of safe ways? Okay. So the next one is negative interpretation. And go ahead.
Yeah.
That's when someone don't negatively interpret.
That's right.
Am I interrupting you? So when someone someone believes that the motives of the other person are more negative than is actually the case. You believe that the motives, you assign motive to either someone's actions or someone's words, and it's negative, oftentimes more so than it really is the case.
Yeah. And this is kind of where, just like John said, when we started looking at this stuff, just going, oh, that's me. That's why I kind of oftentimes react negatively to maybe something John said or maybe something a friend said. Just realizing, did they really say that? No, I'm just thinking that they said that. Oftentimes you see it in an area of insecurity. So if I had a rough day when the kids, you know, were younger, even now, you know, John comes in, how are the kids? And I had a rough day. Maybe I'd lost my temper. I hear, did you destroy these children? Like, are they permanently scarred because of your anger? You know, all these things. And I react negatively instead of, he just wants to know, how was your day? How are the kids? And so I think you'll probably be surprised how often you do that. I know I was. And so just being aware that it's pretty easy just to negatively interpret what somebody's saying, unless, and we'll hit on this again in a minute, but unless you believe the best about that person.
Yeah. And so, like, I mean, we could stand up here literally, you know, if you were interested, we could tell you for the next 2 hours all the ways we've negatively interpreted each other. And I remember talking about lots of classic examples, but one of them, I remember Pam used to call every day about 4 o'clock and ask me what time I was coming home. And I would see her on caller ID, and I remember just getting so agitated. Like, man, are you kidding me? You know, I am busting it here to get home as fast as I can, to, you know, to come back and be a human jungle gym, you know, until 8:30 and do baths and put her into bed. I mean, I'm getting after it, woman, you know, and you're calling me, you're just kind of, you know, kind of goading me to get home even quicker. And I'm just growing in resentment and all those kind of things. And so I remember just asking her, and I said, hey, when you call, you know, at 4 o'clock and say, hey, what time are you coming home? Like, what do you mean? She's like, what? What I mean is, what time are you coming home? Trying to put dinner on the table, just don't want it to be cold, you know, chill out. And so I had just kind of begun to negatively interpret just, you know, caller ID, here's my wife, and now I'm resenting when I see it on caller ID. And so just to ask for clarification, you know, and if she says, well, and then, you know, so the punchline on this one, how do you fix it? You believe the best, right? You believe the best. That's always the starting place. Love believes all things, hopes all things. That's the opening salvo in our curriculum, okay? But if you can't, then you ask for clarification, right? So I want to believe the best. I want to believe the best. I'm having trouble here. So now I'm just going to ask, you know? And so, like, for us, just kind of being late is a big one for us. You know, we've got 4 kids, and I remember when they were little, it was like trying to put shoes on a caterpillar, man. You know, just like, be still, you know. We're always late. And, you know, just somebody's always missing one shoe, and we, you know, we weren't always late, but sometimes we'd be late. And I just was agitated. And I remember, so it's both verbal and it's also nonverbal. We can negatively interpret this stuff. I remember just, I would look, you know, we're in the car, we're going somewhere, we're late, and I'm looking at my watch. And I remember Pam just kind of looking over at me, and she goes, you keep looking at your watch. So, she was trying to believe the best. She couldn't. And she says, so, are you making a comment with that when you look at my watch, you know, when you look at your watch? And so, you know, I've had to say kind of, it's like 50-50. Sometimes I'm looking and see what time it is. And sometimes I'm going, like, you know, I'm effectively going, you know, listen, you know, do you see what time it is? You made us late. I can't believe it. You're irresponsible. That's effectively what I'm saying. And she picked up on it, you know. And so every time she's asked me about that, I've had to go, nope, just, you know, checking to see exactly how late we are going to be. You know, that's a possibility.
Which I choose not to negatively interpret.
Yeah.
That
or,
yeah.
You're right. You know what? I rather than telling you directly, I'm doing that. That's pretty lousy. So forgive me. And I don't want to be that guy, and let's go forward, okay? So areas of insecurity, a lot of times this will come out, you know, it's like for me around home projects, we've got lots of those, you know. I'm sure Pam's criticizing me, and she's just non-verbally looking at it, tilted her head, you know, kind of deal. And I internally erupt, and she's not, you know. Or we had a friend. This is like the craziest example. This is a very wise woman, lucid and sane, and she was pregnant, and she's still lucid and sane, even though she was pregnant. Some of you guys started laughing. But she said, her husband said, "Hey, you know, I'm going to go in the pool. Do you want to come?" And so she hears, "Oh, really? So you want me to go upstairs, put on a swimsuit, come down here and parade in front of everybody because you want to just ridicule me about how fat I am?" That's where she went in her mind, you know, because she was just insecure about the way she looked. And she said that out loud. And everybody in the room just busted out laughing, like knowing her husband. Like, there's just no way. But it's crazy how in our areas of insecurity, how we will think crazy, okay? So just fight to believe the best. And if you can't, ask for clarification. So, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah. No, just, yeah. Again, you'll just, I think, be surprised just how often that is. And if the relationship is characterized by believing the best,
good.
And so there's security there, there's trust there, there's long years of commitment, it's easier to believe the best. So you guys may be in a spot where it's not as easy to believe the best. And you really just have to say, okay, Lord, help me in this situation, believe the best. But just the more time and effort and commitment that's that's in the relationship, and there's just this fundamental belief that John is for me and vice versa, it's easier to believe the best.
Absolutely. Sure. Right. Yeah. So socks on the floor. It can be, I can't believe that lazy bleep, 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 believe that out there for me to do this. He's inconsiderate, a slob, you know, why in the world? Or, oh, isn't that cute? He forgot to put his socks up. I'm glad I get that.
Somewhere
in the middle. a lot depending on just where we are. And that's such a great point, Pam, just where we are in the relationship. And so if we're not in a good place, we've got to work extra hard to believe the best and not start negatively interpreting and then kind of, you know, escalating off the backside of that. Okay, that's a really good point. We have to work hard. So last one is invalidation. Okay, and this is either subtle or direct put downs when you put down like the thoughts or the feelings or the attitudes of someone else. Okay, so just these little jabs or little put downs, sarcasm. And quite honestly, this is the one I excelled at. In terms of invalidators, like early on in marriage, I was a great one. I mean, I could have wrote the chapter on this, and it came because I never wanted to be wrong. And so what I would do is every time Pam would come to me, I instantly go into lawyer mode and begin to kind of cross-examine her, you know, and tell her why what she said is not really the case, how she doesn't understand it, the facts. Here's, you know, if you thought about it this way, all these kind of things, but never saying, you know, tell me some more about that. I went into attack mode. I can't be wrong, so I'm going to invalidate everything she said. And so that was a big part of, not a big part, that was a part of our story. And so there was lots of oneness in lots of areas, but I just had a really hard time not being right and letting her be right. And so I would resort to kind of this invalidation, kind of subtle put downs. And so what would happen then is, you know, Pam would just go like, on those topics, I'm just not going to go there because I know how that goes. You're just going to tell me I don't get it. So we won't go there. We'll have a great marriage outside of that. But those topics we just won't touch. And we didn't know what to call it, but that's exactly kind of what it was. Yeah.
And so, I mean, as you know, John just admitted just that was a struggle, you know, early on. And now just to see the way that he's open to us talking about things. And so maybe he doesn't always agree. The goal is not to agree on everything. The goal is to understand. And so for him just to be able to say, okay, I may not agree. We may go with your plan. We may go with my plan, whatever it is. The goal is not to win. It's to understand. And so that's the way to fix this. If this is your ditch, it's just to remember that the goal of communication is to understand. And then when you get to that point, then you can easily, if you need to make a decision, do that. But the goal is to understand where each other's coming from.
That's really good. I talked about a lot. I feel like I talked a lot about me. What would you say is your biggest ditch up here?
Well, I negative interpretation. I think I said that for sure. I was trying to think of a good story. We've got lots of them. I think just that is just not believing the best about when John's going to come to me with something. Just last week, or was a few weeks ago, he wanted to talk while we were, I think we've talked about this before maybe, he wanted to talk while we were running, which is not a good idea in the first place, at the end of a run. And I instantly just thought, You know, he just wants to slam me about something, and just didn't believe the best, that he really just wanted to work through this thing that had kind of been coming at us, and just wanted to talk through something that was going to be the best for one of our kids. But just I instantly just thought, he's going to try to put me down on this. And so I just kind of instantly just, I think I just put my hand up and ran faster. I don't know what I did.
Sure, kicked up a dust and it left me. So,
I don't know. A little withdrawal and a little negative interpretation there.
Yeah, that's good.
But yeah.
That's good. Yeah. What's that?
The letters.
Yeah. So if you take the first letters of each of those, withdrawal, escalation, negative interpretation, and invalidation, it spells weenie. And that has just been so helpful to us, right? Don't be a weenie. And just knowing those categories, right? Because if someone just says, hey, you're a jerk, you know, like, where do you even start with that, right? How do you change? But, hey, it just feels like you just invalidated me. And I was trying to share, and, you know, I would just love it if you could just listen and tell me what you heard. That'd be great. Or, hey, you're just kind of escalating, and I would love to have this conversation with you. Or I'm escalating, and I don't want to do that. And so just knowing what to call that is really, really helpful, okay? And then as you get better, you'll learn how just to kind of begin to kind of listen to each other and fight really even harder. Maybe simply you're fighting harder to understand their point of view than you are to get yours across. And when you do that, everything changes. So it smells a lot like Philippians 2, 3, and 4, putting others' interest above our own, considering others as more important than ourselves. And when you do that in communication, great things happen, right? And Pam and I joked that early on in our marriage, it was rather than like listening, we were just trying to win. And so it looked a lot more like a Civil War musket battle, you know? So she's talking, I'm like, oh, I've got a great comeback, you know, for that one. I'm just kind of, you know, loading the musket. And as soon as she's done, I would just come up, you know, and she's reloading while I'm talking. And so rather than it's kind of a back and forth, just going, hey, you know what? There's no winner. There's no loser. We're just going to talk. And here's my biggest goal here is to understand. And we'll start there. And you know what? I'll be able to articulate later how I think, but I really want to understand what you think about this. And so there's all these really elaborate like problem-solving models that researchers and theorists have put together. And we've just found if we can understand each other, we don't need to go through those exercises. That really is the deal. So,
yeah, oftentimes if you do, so maybe there is a decision you have to make, you're at a place where you can make that well, because you understand where each other are coming from. Mm-hmm. I did want to add one thing, just on the general topic of communication is, and this is really probably been my biggest struggle, it's just timing. And so women and men, but just to be careful and just be aware of our timing when we talk to our spouse about something. So whether you've got something, you know, to encourage them about, or specifically if you've got something to criticize or an issue you want to talk about, just to be really careful of the timing. So we are commanded to speak the truth, and that's not an option, and do it in love, but kind of how we do it and the timing and the place and all that and the attitude we do it with is up to us. And so, last week, John was home. On a Wednesday, he went home. Sometimes he'll go home and work at home because the house is quiet. And so he was in there, and I pulled in the garage, and I had just gotten an email with a grade from my son. And before I couldn't even see him, he was around the corner on the couch. And I am talking all the way in the kitchen, hadn't even seen him yet, about all these frustrations and how we've got to just work on things with our son and maybe even how much of that might be his fault or any of that. So I don't know if I did or not, but just all of a sudden, I think it was a fine conversation, actually. Just, hey, we've got to work on these things. So I walk in, oh, hi, babe, you know, and I said, hey, did you want to know that? And he was like, yes, but like a hi, how are you would have been great first. So even that, yeah. I mean, that's just a little glimpse of just a small thing, but just the timing on that, just being aware that, hey, like he would like to, hey, how was your day? Hey, can we talk about our son? And so just timing, and then that's small, but then you know if you've got something, hey, babe, I really want to talk to you about this area where you hurt my feelings or whatever. Like just knowing that when all the kids are around, they've had a really rough day, they got some really hard news, but that's not a loving way to do that.
Yep, that's great.
So I'm really working, God's really working on me in that. And the bigger thing, biggest part of that too, is just as we talk about owning our own part first, whether it's a log or a little speck, just owning what's in your own eye first before you go to that person and going to him humbly.
That's good. That's good. You know, another thing, just another tidbit is just to be careful about the way you start conversations. And so the research will show if you go in there animated or angry or things like that, almost always the conversation tanks. And when you go in soft and say, hey, I'd love to talk about this. Is this a good time? Those kind of things, it will go well. Okay. The beginning oftentimes will mirror how things are resolved. Not always, but oftentimes, okay? Which sounds a lot like the couple of proverbs, a gentle answer turns away wrath, right? And when you come in soft, people aren't immediately defensive. You come in angry and animated, and they will tend to match that. And so just another little tidbit. So good.
Anything else? I'm good on that one too. He's a little more soft than I am. I'm a little more animated.
But I'm sneaky. I'm not a yeller.
I'm loud and animated.
Great. Okay. Yeah. Hey, guys, it'll be fun, if you want to go there in your community group, which one of those is your ditch? But just be thinking about that, okay? How can I own my part in this? How can I? Communication is an amazing pathway to oneness. What do we need to do to improve that, okay? Hey, if this is your first time here, we're so glad that you're here. And in a second, we're going to break, and people will go a lot of different places. If this is your first time, we ask that you'd come right here, and you'll get to meet Susan Cox. We're all sick tonight, but you're going to love getting to hear her story and meet her. She'll tell you all that you need to know about Reengage. Okay, that'll be right here. If you've been to newcomers but aren't in a closed group, then you'll go to open group, and those are rooms 211 and 212. And so you have to go down those stairs and back over to the tower. Up to the second. Construction should be done. Thanks for bearing with us. It should be done soon. But we have to go downstairs to walk back over there. And then we got two new closed groups, both the Smiths and the McEwens, back to lead again. So you can give it up for these guys. Good job. And those are super couples that you're gonna love to get to know. And so I think, is there anything else, Susan? Great. Hey, you guys have a great night pursuing oneness, and we'll see you next week.